All right, welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. As I mentioned before, today I'm here wearing two hats, one as a teacher and the other as Mission Dharma board member and board president, because this topic of Sangha is so dear to me in both aspects. I've sort of had this realization that my entire spiritual path has really been leading to this deeper participation in and building of and support of Sangha. And I think sometimes Sangha may get a bit of a short shrift. And so I think it's important that we understand what Sangha is, the function of Sangha, the promise of Sangha, and then to talk together to see what is it that we can do here at Mission Dharma that can help sort of build that sense of Sangha if it's not feeling like it's there already. Maybe some of you are good to go, but I think that there's some things that we can also do to help it feel a little bit more cohesive or more supportive. So what is Sangha? Sangha is one of the three jewels of Buddhism, or the three refuges, along with the Buddha, right? The historical Buddha, Buddha Shakyamuni, the external Buddha. When we take refuge, we could take refuge in either sort of this, the appreciation, the gratitude towards the historical Buddha, or internally towards our own Buddha nature, right? Our own Buddha seed, our own awakened nature. And then there's also the Dharma. And externally, we talk about the Dharma as the teachings of the Buddha. But then the Dharma is also, interior is like the truth of how things are. And then there's the Sangha. And historically, when they talked about the Sangha, it could have been one of two things. One is sort of this collection of awakened beings, the noble Arya Sangha. And then, or it could refer to a group of monks and nuns who are practicing together, like in a monastery, the Sangha. But now, in modern times, we really just talk about Sangha as just sort of a collection, a community of practitioners, right? You're here, you're Sangha. And we can be all sorts of different places on our spiritual path. I mean, some of us here are very serious practitioners. We've been doing this for a while. And others may be just sort of, sticking our toes in, right? Just based on this hunch that coming together and doing this together, may have some benefit. It may alleviate some suffering, whether temporarily or a permanent cessation of our suffering. So the Buddha, there's a story about the Buddha. He was hanging out with his cousin, his right-hand man, Ananda. And Ananda was just kind of enjoying, this is half of the spiritual life. Admirable companionship, admirable friendship, admirable camaraderie. This is great. This is half of the spiritual life. And the Buddha corrected him. He called him out and he said, no, don't say that, Ananda. Don't say that. Actually, this is the whole of the spiritual life. Admirable friendship, admirable camaraderie, companionship. Because he said, when a monk or practitioner has admirable people as friends, companions, and comrades, he could be expected to develop and pursue the Noble Eightfold Path. So without that, we're not going to be making, we're not really fulfilling the path. I think we can sometimes get this mistaken impression that our practice, is fairly solitary. I mean, our meditation practice itself sort of leads to that. We sit there, we close our eyes, we're not talking to anyone, and we go inside. And we see what's happening. We see things as they are. Yet, when we come up out of the cushion, that doesn't mean our practice has ended. That's all, our meditation is just part of our practice. It's just part of the path. And so when he's talking about the Noble Eightfold Path, You know, right in the middle of the Eightfold Path is sila, or ethical conduct, right? This is how we are in the world. You know, we don't exist alone. Our path is, you know, we can't be, you know, creating all sorts of harm in the world and expect to come to the cushion and have a peaceful mind. It doesn't make sense, right? And we know this from our own experience. So like when things are kind of crazy or we've done something we regret, we go to meditate, you know, we're not peaceful. And so in sila, you know, talks about, you know, right action, right speech, right livelihood. Like, how do we create a life of not harming? How do we live how do we relate to others in the world? And so Sangha really is sort of this container where we can practice that. Not that it's only in Sangha that we practice that, but it's like on the cushion, right? We practice being with things as they are, so that when we get up from our cushion, we have a better ability to do that in our, you know, I don't want to say regular life, but off the cushion. And it's the same with Sangha. You know, we have this opportunity of sort of being with each other in a fairly special way that goes against the stream. And so we can practice together in that way. And so that our practice then extends into the whole of our life. So when we come into Sangha, when we come into a space like this, we're stepping into a very special container that is held by sila. Now, if you've ever been on retreat or maybe some other places, they'll recite the refuges or they'll recite the precepts, the precepts of non-harming, right? The five precepts. But when you, even though we don't recite those here, it's held implicitly. It's an understanding that when you come into this place, you're coming into a container of safety. You're coming into a refuge, right? Because that's what a refuge is a place where we can feel protected, we can feel safe. And so we want to be able to step into Sangha, into a space where we feel that we can just be as we are. We don't have to come in and adopt some sort of special spiritual identity. We don't need to be all holy, right? If we come in and we're feeling good and life is good, it's like that can be held by the Sangha with mudita. You know, we're happy, you're happy. If you come in and you're feeling broken and you're feeling sad, you're lost, you know, that can be met with compassion. And even if you come in cranky, you know, that could be met with patience and kindness. So you can show up however you are and feel supported, feel accepted, and feel seen. And so that really is, you know, part of the promise of Sangha, because we want a place that feels safe so that we can let go, right? Because our practice is asking us to be with sometimes difficult things, right? When we close our eyes, we don't know what's going to come up. It's not always peaceful in there. Sometimes it's difficult. And so we need to be able to feel safe enough to let down our guard and to be able to just let whatever needs to come up to come up. So really, Sangha is also a practice. When we come into Sangha, because we're being held by these precepts, by the sila, it's a way of sort of dealing with things differently. You know, it's like maybe you encounter somebody who kind of bugs you. You know, can you just be with that and hold it and not be reactive and feel that? And just, okay, that's how things are. You know, can we be with people that we like without clinging? You know, can we suspend judgment? You know, so all of these things that we can practice as Sangha. And so that's part of being in community. So I'll just tell you my brief experience with Sangha and why I feel so strongly about it. When I first started practice back in the 90s or so, I remember a different tradition, but I loved the teachings, and I loved the teacher, and I would go in and I wanted nothing to do with anybody. I just, they were really friendly and kind of huggy, and I would just kind of blow in and blow out, And finally, I wanted to go deeper, and they offered an advanced study class. And I remember they said, we're going to study these books, and we're going to have talks, and there's going to be meditation, and there's going to be paired discussion. And I remember I wrote to the teacher, and I said, can I not do the discussion? This all sounds really good otherwise. And he was like, no. And so finally, then I started to open up, and there was something about there was an accountability, by having Sangha, by having people that were sort of on the same path and doing the same thing. There was a sense of accountability. There was a sense I didn't want to let them down, even when sometimes I would let myself down. But then that Sangha got a little weird because it felt like it was a little bit too much peer pressure, and there was a little bit too aspirational. People were kind of doing a lot of spiritual bypassing, and they weren't genuine. They weren't authentic. And so I left, sort of in search of something else. And I came here to Insight Meditation, where it felt like we're just with things as they are. It wasn't so aspirational. It wasn't so, I don't know, it just felt more real. And again, sort of in a bubble. And it wasn't until that I joined a KM group that I'm pointing at one of my former KMers over here, Kalyanamita, which is a group that comes together, sort of like a Buddhist book club. But then you practice being in Sangha, you practice this relationship of just being real. And it was then I felt my mind start to relax. And in that relaxation, then the practice for me really blossomed. There was something about finding that safety within others that really allowed my mind to relax and my practice to blossom. And ever since then, I've been really interested in trying to create those conditions, for others to sort of have that experience, to have that to feel really that jewel of Sangha. So I'm just going to leave that there, because what I really want to do is to have a discussion about the Mission Dharma Sangha. What is it that you're looking for? What is it that feels missing? What are we doing right? What can we do more of? So I'm just going to open up the... and we have a mic runner.
I'm just curious, can you hear me? Yeah?
Okay. Yeah.
I'm just curious what it was you did in the KM group that made you feel that.
I think it was, for myself, it was getting to know people individually. It was forming those relationships that were based in sila, that were based in practice, and that sense of just, acceptance. So there was something there that that really sort of was able to open up.
Yeah. Because I think this space feels comfortable to me, but I often wish that there were more of an interactive mm-hmm. aspect to it that was structured, not just tea time, mm-hmm. or not just say hi to your neighbor. I think for me personally, some sort of structured icebreaker, even something mm-hmm. fun would be, I don't know when it would take place now, but that would provide a structure or arena for, I think, more interaction, which mm-hmm. I would love, yeah. Okay. I'm not comfortable at parties.
Right. Right.
And to be in a group, a huge group, if it's Sangha or not, it feels like a party a little bit, And so, yeah.
I understand. Yeah, and by the way, I also wanted to introduce the board. We do have all the Board of Mission Dharma here. Dan is here, Catherine with a K, Catherine with a C, Noemi. The only one missing is Howie. And we come together once a month and we do discuss these things, like, what can we do? You know, so thank you. Thank you for that.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dan. You've probably heard me here before talking about volunteers and other announcements. Thanks for sharing that, because Mary and I were just talking about this a few minutes ago, and we thought about what could we do to cultivate something like that has structure, right? Because this is a big room. There's a lot of people. We're all here for similar reasons, but perhaps some different reasons. But there's probably a lot of core interests and values. And so one of the things that would be most easily done would be to work together at Happiness Hour, which is the second Tuesday of every month, where we get here at 6 o'clock. And we've talked about creating a format there, be it, some sort of book, effort where we pick a topic from Dharmic teachings or something topical that's going on in the world and how we might apply something from the Eightfold Path. So there's a few people in this room, fellow board members that want to figure out how to make Happiness Hour more structured. And so if that's of interest to you or anyone here, come find me after we finish talking, or email us, please. Email us. We respond to them. We would love to hear from people. And like Mary said, we meet once a month and we talk about this and how we might get better at cultivating community. So find me or any of the other board members, or email us, and let's get a conversation going about structure.
And we haven't been a sangha that does a lot of dyads. I think some of you who have been in other groups, sometimes they'll have discussions where you turn to your partner and you have a discussion, and some people love it and some people go
I appreciate what Dan was saying about that group, but I too would like to see more of it happening here during the time we spend together in the big room.
Okay, can we get your mic? Yeah.
Yes, here in the big group, not time aside from here, but finding a framework where maybe you, with that experience that you're talking about, mm-hmm. or the board members, could find some way of, including in the talk, or, some time where people could, in groups of two, in groups of three, maybe, mm-hmm. Always have something with a topic, with a topic of sila, mm-hmm. Or whatever, be able to know each other a little bit more. Because what I feel is a lack of, when I come here, I love it, but then I go out of here, and it feels like, what would happen if whatever happens and I would need some support?
Yeah.
Where I don't know the people. I know their names. Sometimes somebody, you get together, you say hello, but that's about it. Mm-hmm. And I feel there's a need for me of more deep contact with others.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. I'm just curious, just by a quick, the idea of group discussions or paired discussions, does that make you go, oh, that sounds interesting, or does it make you go, ugh? So for those who'd like be interested in sort of incorporating more sort of group discussions or dyads, is just a little hand. I'm just curious. You don't have to commit to anything. So it's about, it looks like about half and half. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for leading this today. I agree that the idea of pairing up is nice, and I think giving a lot of structure to that is helpful, coming uh-huh. as a teacher of middle and high school students, like asking specific questions that right. you answer to a partner or to a small group. Uh-huh. But I think fundamentally too, something that would be really valuable is to discuss more the qualities in everyone that can be of value to everyone. Mm-hmm. I think oftentimes I come here or to other types of services hoping to gain knowledge from a guru or mm-hmm. something, which is, I'm like aware that part of the meditation is to come away from the idea that it's right. from someone else, but it's sort of like, you know, I value these people, but I don't, I think there's a resistance to like learning high spiritual things from mm-hmm. your neighbor, mm-hmm. even though I believe that there's a lot to be learned.
Right, right. So how would you see that? I mean, it was that like more in a sort of a group discussion sort of? Because I mean, it's true. It's like whenever I've done smaller classes and we have that sharing time where people talk about their practice, so much is learned from one another. It really is. It really is amazing. So how would you see that formatted? I'm just curious.
I think it's through action, like consistently having the leader facilitate that sort of thing, and mm-hmm. and rather than sort of talk about how we can all learn from one another and, you know, right, divine connections, but like demonstrating on a consistent basis that right. we can have a conversation that can be fruitful.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Just my thought.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I was just going to express the other point of view is when I come here, I really like to be quiet and just listen, and the world's so busy and I'm engaging with people all the time. Like
right.
I would feel even more exhausted coming here and feeling like I have to turn to my neighbor who I don't know. And I know, you know, we should all get to know each other, but it's, you know, you don't know each other and it takes
right.
time, and it's kind of exhausting too. So for yeah. me, it wouldn't be as enjoyable just because I'd feel like, oh no, I gotta now do the pair work, and I've been talking all day to people. I just wanted to come and be quiet and listen right. to, you know, have a little bit of talk, but just be quiet and listen.
Yeah.
And I think there's a value to that in this busy world where we're always trying to collaborate and
right.
come up, brainstorm great ideas together, you know.
Yeah.
That's just my opinion.
Yeah. No, I appreciate you voicing that, because, I mean, I know, you know, for a long time that was my MO. I just wanted to come in. I wanted to sit with everybody, sort of take advantage of that energy of the group, you know, to sit. I wanted to hear a talk, and I wanted out of there, you know. So.
Maybe there's room for, like, for me, where you really get to know people is if you have them over for dinner. Maybe there's a way to just, you know, people who feel comfortable doing that volunteer to have 3 or 4 people over, and there's a sign-up list, and we have these really kind of intimate gatherings, but at our homes, where you can really get to know each other.
Hmm.
So it wouldn't feel as forced, and it just, I don't know. For me, that's where I get to know people and enjoy it.
Okay. All right, thank you. Yeah. Noemi.
That's a good segue.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Noemi, and I'm a board member. I like that idea, and that's probably one of the purposes of a KM group. And it's a group that meets around a certain topic, and they meet monthly at various people's homes. So a group could be anywhere from 4 to 8. So that's something we would look at in the coming year. And in fact, I don't want to be excluded, but I'm looking at starting a women's KM group and also a POC group. I don't want to leave anyone out, but those are my focuses. I'm really looking to build diversity in the group, and I think it's really important. Would that be something you're talking about? Okay. And, you know, I missed the opportunity. I don't know where I was when the KM group that Mary
I know.
was in. I kind of missed the boat. And I think, Catherine, you were in a KM group. Again. No, not Catherine C, Catherine K. Yet. So maybe people want to speak to that. So, yeah, come talk to me and put a fire under me and I'll get the ball rolling.
Okay, thank you, Noemi. Kalyanamita. It's basically spiritual friendship.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, KM, spiritual, Kalyanamita. Oops. Is my microphone?
So I like the idea of group interactions that are planned and the food. So at the same time, because I think probably one of the one of the warmest experiences I've had here was a happiness hour with all the volunteers when I actually got to know people. So I think we had that maybe, I don't know, once a month, when it's not before the meditation, but after. And there's food and like plant interaction.
Okay.
Maybe once every other month. I don't know.
Right. Okay. So rather than having happiness hour before the sit, to do something after the sit and then.
Right.
Okay.
A little more social and interactive.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Hi. Did I got that? First, I wanted to call out and say that, like, one thing which Mission Dharma is doing really well is providing this safe space every Tuesday, which is easy to come into, and there is no pressure. Like, I miss a few weeks, I'm like, okay, no big deal.
Right.
It'll always be there when
right.
I go back.
Right.
And, like, I discovered this place, this community, maybe 3-4 years ago, and then I disappeared for a long time, and I came back earlier this year and have been a lot more regular. So I'm really thankful for the Sangha and also the board members for keeping it going. Echoing the thoughts of more community connection, something I feel that I would enjoy and value, which I don't know how to really, I haven't given much thought to how to make it happen, is more touch points through the week. Because typically what would happen is I would come in on Tuesday and I'd be like, oh, I heard something, which is an interesting concept, I want to look that up, or there is a quote, I want to read more about it, or more from that author or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would just like slip away and forget about it. Whereas if I was working with someone else, like it could be like, hey, have you looked that up? Should we talk about that? And
mm-hmm.
it could just be like me finding out who lives around me, who I can hang out with on a Thursday or a Friday, and like talk about what stuck with me from the Dharma talk on Tuesday.
Okay.
So like something that's more regular than a week.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that really is, I mean, you know, when Sangha just becomes sort of part of your life, you know, you have these friends that maybe you've met here or you've met in other sanghas, and then it just becomes, you know, just the Dharma just becomes more and more ingrained in your life, you know, where you just, the conversations about Dharma and the teachings just sort of come naturally. You know, amidst, you know, I mean, with Dan, I mean, we could talk Dharma and then we'll talk dogs, you know, and it just flows, you know, one run from the other. It's not like we're going to have a serious Dharma talk now, but it's like, you know, how's Brando and, you know, what did the Buddha say about this? So, so it just becomes more integrated. So, thank you.
I started coming to the Sangha about almost exactly three years ago, I think. And when I first came, I felt kind of intimidated because it is a big room and there
mm-hmm.
were a lot of people I didn't know.
Right.
maybe a couple people I knew. And I started volunteering, and this is in by no means a veiled plug to volunteer. I'm just sharing my experience. But I started volunteering, and although while the volunteering is working, you know, it's not necessarily sitting and having talks about the teachings or the Dharma, or, but I felt like I was somehow like very quickly absorbed into the fabric of the Sangha and the feeling of this community in a way that has really deepened my connection, not only with the community, but with my commitment to sit and sit at home and read books. And so I feel like it is all sort of inextricably connected.
Yeah.
And for me, just the experience of doing a little bit of service for the Sangha was a way to really get to know people.
Right.
So.
Thank you. That's beautifully put, because it does sort of open things up. You know, when we start making those connections, it has an impact on our practice. It has an impact on our relationships.
Right, because I got to know the small group of people that I volunteered with on my Tuesday shift, and then I started getting to know more people when I... It just sort of multiplied.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah.
And there's a party. There's parties.
So, any thoughts from some folks who've been here for a really long time? I'm looking at the back row over there. You know, what is it that that you get from Sangha? Or is the attraction is like the connection with Howie? Is it the community, or is it with? I'm just curious for any folks who, I know, I keep on looking back at Charlie and Andy, who are like looking at me going, okay. Any other thoughts? I love the idea. I love the ideas that are percolating, and I truly respect sometimes the wish just to come and sit and be quiet. You know, that it doesn't have to be another social obligation. You know, and so for me, it's like, how do we find that middle way of having those times where it's like we're quiet and we sit? Because that's always was when I was sort of in the wilderness for a while looking for a sangha. Some sanghas felt too clubby, and there was just way too much hugging of strangers, and I was just like, please don't hug me, I don't know you. And others felt too aloof, or they felt too clicky. There was always something. And so it was like, how do you find that happy medium where you can just be as you are? It's like, if I want to be quiet, I want to be quiet, and it's not a problem. But if I want to socialize and be in community, I also have space to do that. And so that, to me, is what we're sort of trying to find, that happy medium. And sometimes we may have to, you know, challenge ourselves. But sometimes, you know, there may be like some social thing, or we do discussion where it's like, maybe we have to step out of our comfort zone. But, you know, we don't want to become too clubby, and we don't want to be in, yeah.
At one point, Howie, I think it was maybe last year sometime, and maybe he's done this repeatedly, but he sort of suggested that we find someone or a small group to sit with maybe once a week, someone around us, and sort of encouraged us to try to make connections with someone else in the Sangha to do a sitting outside of Tuesday nights. And I found that to be really wonderful.
Right.
You know.
So how did you facilitate that? Did you just talk to somebody, or was there like...
I think Anne reached out to me and went turn and cut. Anyway, we knew we lived in the same neighborhood.
Mm.
And so we sat together for a few mornings, you know, over 3 months or something. And it was very supportive to practice.
Nice. Thank you.
Thanks for saying that. I want to say one more thing. I think that one of the common themes here is that we need, as a board, to facilitate these types of things. And so, as Catherine just described, that's excellent that you guys were able to like grassroots it and make it happen. But I think we need to take the accountability to set this up. I will also going to include with that, when we make the announcements about volunteers, we do definitely need more help to do this kind of thing. There's 15 volunteers. There's 3 people on each Tuesday to set up and break down. And so sometimes we're operating with just the right amount of people just to get the lights on, the chairs set up, the PayPal thing hooked up, and we're super grateful for those. But if we had, let's say, 4 more people, we could pull off so much more. So maybe that person's in the room tonight, maybe they're here next week, but I'm gonna keep talking about volunteering. And to Catherine's point, I came here 3 years ago suffering tremendously. You didn't say anything about suffering. I was suffering, and okay, so we were suffering. I was suffering tremendously, and I didn't want to talk to anybody. I wanted to come in and meditate. I was reading about neuroscience. I wanted the benefits. I had no idea what was going on in here. I heard Dharma, Buddha, Sangha, no clue. Then I heard teachings that resonated. Then I volunteered, and then I got to know everyone, and then became a board member. But there's more that we want to do, and so email us if volunteering is something you're open to doing in 2020. Find us, and we can. There's nothing we can't do with a few more people's, efforts.
Okay. So, does anybody have anything else? Because we're just close to time, and I want to read this. Anne. Yes.
Hi, I'm Anne. I just want to thank Mary for facilitating this as well, because I think there's a thirst for this, and having been here for many years, to see the progress of being able to get to this place is very heartwarming. One thing that I was reminded of, someone brought up kind of things Howie would challenge the Sangha on, like the new year he would do, 90-day, just try and sit every day for 90 days.
Right.
And it's lovely, but it would kind of fizzle. He would, this is not any repudiation of Howie, but I wonder if there, because now there are more teachers in the Sangha, or people who have done teacher training, if there would be someone who would volunteer to come forward to kind of hold a group if people are doing the challenge, to meet before, if there are questions or things that are coming up. Because I think for someone to just hold these types of conversations, right, as you have done tonight, is really wonderful.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good idea. I've often noticed, because we have the church starting at 6:00, and how that nave, which is a really lovely little space in the corner, would be such a good place for practice discussions or a KM group or something like that. So thank you. So I just want to, Thich Nhat Hanh, I believe, was the one who said that the next Buddha is actually going to be a Sangha. It's a really interesting idea. Not an individual, but a collective of people. So I just want to read you what Thich Nhat Hanh said about Sangha. He said, taking refuge in the Sangha is a very important practice. Abandoned, alone, you get lost. You get carried away. So taking refuge in the Sangha is a very deep practice, especially for those of us who feel vulnerable, shaky, agitated, and unstable. That is why you come to a practice center to take refuge in the Sangha. You allow the Sangha to transport you like a boat that you can cross the ocean of sorrow. When we sit together as Sangha, we enjoy the collective energy of mindfulness, and each of us allows the mindful energy of the Sangha to penetrate us. Even if you don't do anything, if you just stop thinking and allow yourself to absorb the collective energy of the Sangha, it's very healing. Don't struggle. Don't try to do something. Just allow yourself to be with the Sangha. Allow yourself to rest, and the energy of Sangha will help you, will carry and support you. The Sangha is there to make training easy. When we're surrounded by brothers and sisters doing exactly the same thing, it's easy to flow into the stream of Sangha. We don't profit from the Sangha, and the Sangha doesn't profit from us. Don't think that we sit for ourselves. You don't sit for yourself alone. You sit for the whole Sangha, and not only the whole Sangha, but also for the people in your city, because when one person in the city is less angry, is smiling more, the whole city profits. If we practice looking deeply, our understanding of interbeing will grow, and we will see that every smile, every step, every breath is for everybody. It is for our future, for our country, and for our ancestors. So if there has been any merit from our coming together as a Sangha, let us spread that benefit far and wide to those within the Sangha, without the Sangha, those known, unknown, near, far, human, non-human. May all living beings be happy. May all living beings be free from suffering. And may all living beings be free. Thank you very much for your participation and for your presence. Howie will be back next week.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.